Hi, and welcome to the Affinity Finance podcast. I'm Sarah Corrigan for Affinity Finance, and with me today I have Dominic Regan, and we will be discussing the importance of witness statements. Dominic specialises in delivering training for the legal services sector, and I'm delighted to have him on our podcast today once again. So, Dom, let's talk about witness statements. Why are they so important?
Great question. They are absolutely crucial. And for this reason, the witness statement is really nothing less than the evidence that a party is going to adduce, whether it is for the client or for the witnesses or for both. And of course, the norm is that witness statements now shall go in at the hearing and stand as the evidence or in chief of that witness. So put it simply, if you leave something important out of the witness statement, is not in evidence. And for a claimant, you've got the burden of proof. You've got to prove your case. So if it's not in there, then you can lose what would otherwise be an unlosable case because of gaps, because of omission. So that is why witness statements are so absolutely fundamental to litigation. And maybe a small minority, but I get a sense that some people do a lot of cutting and pasting, and they just put in, really trite things, and they don't get down to, we don't get too complicated, we'll come to that later, but you've got to tell your story. And what I always say is this, very simple guidance. If you had that witness at trial, and you wanted them to convey a piece of evidence, then it should be in the witness statement. The statement is the evidence. The evidence is the statement. And that's why they are so absolutely critically important.
Thanks, Dominic. And so what are the most common mistakes?
Where do we begin? There are loads of them. Number one, as I've just indicated, is leaving gaps, not dealing head on with your case positively. Yeah. So that's absolutely, if it's part of my case, it should be in the witness statement. What drives me to distraction, and I'm nobody, but what drives judges to distraction are people either putting in the wrong material, in particular, putting in arguments and just sort of having a go at the other side. And just sort of like by way of example, just a few weeks ago, there's reported a case called Danish Customs and Taxes, and the judge criticised both sides because each one, frankly, and I don't think this is a legal term, was slagging off the other's case, saying, "Ah, that's a load of tosh, that's a load of rubbish." That is not the purpose of a witness statement. The statement should contain evidence. What it should absolutely not contain is legal argument or submissions or any other extraneous material. It should be focused, and also, of course, it's got to come from the witness. And again, I know Affinity have a very sophisticated audience, and they will have been reading the latest supplement to the white book, the Bible. And there's a case in there where Master Marsh, again, great man, points out that if you're acting for a company in litigation, then and there's a witness statement, the company can't make the statement because the company is not a human person. It is a legal person. It is not a human person. So in other words, where you have evidence coming in litigation on behalf of a corporate entity, then you need a human person representing the company to make the witness statement. So the witness statement can be from a director, from the company secretary, and they are in the position to convey that information on behalf of a legal entity, the company, the corporation, that of course does not exist as such. So I mean, these are just really, you might think, simple, obvious things. The Court of Appeal has whinged about statements. There's a case called Pew in 2001, where Lord Justice Ward said the statement was, and I quote, "practically useless," unquote, because there was no facts in there. We keep on coming back to its detail its specifics, its evidence, it is material. So there are a few major, and of course, not for a witness to start acting as a judge. And so for a witness to say, oh, well, it was definitely the defendant's fault. They were negligent. It was all their fault. Just tell the story and let the judge look at the facts, and the judge can then deduce from the facts what went wrong and form a view. It is as simple, it is clear as that. So that is the legitimate approach. And just one more example, and you might not think this is true, but it is. There's an infamous case called Alex Lorry in 2001, where this lady, first of all, she swore a statement saying that she could barely read and write. Indeed, it came out, she had never read a book in her life. She'd had a try at reading Animal Farm, but couldn't cope with that. So, okay, so that's the beginning of the witness statement. In the next bit of the witness statement, she starts analysing decisions of the highest court in the land. And she never written these words. These words were put in there by a lawyer. And the Court of Appeal said, this is outrageous. She could never, how can be illiterate and then be, in the next paragraph, a leading legal genius? Don't go there. Keep it clean. And also, just one more thought, which we'll come back to later. Like me, don't be long-winded. Be as focused, as specific. The great George Orwell, talking about Animal Farm, George Orwell said, you know, short paragraphs, short sentences, short words. The best advice ever when drafting any kind of material.
Some very important points there. Thank you, Dominic. That being said, is it a big deal if I were to serve them slightly late?
Oh, God, it is. And this is, I think this is the great ambush of modern litigation. So let's just take a scenario whereby court, as it will do, because in every action, we're going to have witness statements. The court says, right, you will, it doesn't matter whether you're the claimant or the defendant or anybody else, you will serve your witness statements by, say, 4 p.m. on this date, right? If you miss that deadline, you are in deep trouble. And the catch is that the court order, which I've just described, sounds quite gentle. You know, it just says, right, you will serve these statements by 4 p.m. on the 15th of August, for example. The problem is hiding in the undergrowth, in the rules. Part 32 deals with witness statements, and Part 32.10 contains a crippler of a provision, and it is this. If you don't serve witness statements when you've been told to serve witness statements, you can't call the witnesses to give evidence unless you get relief, forgiveness from the courts. And that, so if you miss the deadline, then you can't call the witnesses. And so you're a claimant. How can you prove your case? If you're a defendant, say, and you know, you think, well, we were in trouble, but we've got a great, say we said an injury case, for example, we've got a great case on contributory negligence. They didn't put on a helmet, they didn't wear goggles, they, you know, whatever it might be. But if you haven't got that evidence before the court, then the court's gonna say, well, I don't know anything about it. I don't know, I can't. The claimant must get 100%, even though they shouldn't, because the defendant has not adduced relevant evidence. So getting statements served in time is crucial. Of course, if you see a deadline looming, there is provision in advance of the deadline. This is rule part 3.81 of the CPR rules. 381 imposes a sanction. 384 enables you to agree an extension of time. So always try and get an extension of time. If you can't get an extension of time, then you're going to have to make an application to the court for more time. But if you miss the deadline, then, and we've spoken about this on previous occasions, it will then be incumbent upon the guilty party to make a formal application to the court for relief from sanctions. And that is the whole Denton territory. And people, I'm sure, do know about Denton. If they are fuzzy, We've discussed this before, and they can look at another of the Ian Cunningham Affinity podcasts to just catch up on that topic. But so it is absolutely vital that the deadline is honoured and material is served in time.
Wow, it is obviously vital that we try to adhere to these deadlines. Who, in your opinion, should be producing these statements then?
Every time, it should be the person who is in the know. It should not be somebody who's been told something by somebody else. And, you know, that just weakens the quality, the clout, the calibre of the evidence. So what we always want, so for example, you know, if it was a commercial dispute about a company enters into an agreement and then the other party breaches the agreement, have the person who was there, who signed the contract, who entered into the agreement. They're in pole position to give that evidence. Coming back to accident cases, I mean, obviously, the claimant rather than the claimant's solicitor should be talking about, you know, things like, you know, how the accident occurred. I mean, there are circumstances where it may be an application to the court, an interim application, where it would be right for the solicitor to make the application. For example, the defendant has not complied with an order for disclosure. So the client is, unless of course they happen to be a solicitor or a barrister, the client isn't going to have a clue what the hell disclosure is. So it should then be the solicitor who can recite evidence and say, right, the court made this order. It provided that the defendant should disclose accident report documents no later than the 4th of whatever. It's not occurred. I've not received the documents. I sent them chasers. Again, direct evidence. Who sent the chaser? The person making the statement. Always the best evidence, the purest evidence, comes from the person who was directly involved. And it is, again, it is bonkers where we get people making statements, and you know what, they don't know anything. They're just sort of, it's almost like gossip, you know, saying, oh well, so and so said to me, and I believe it to be true. But I mean, where's the test? Where's the beef? Where's the quality? It is just not there. So again and again, the person in the front line. And coming back to your question about late witness statements, if a witness statement is late, then the person with conduct of that action should definitely be the person who is producing the witness statement. They're the ones who can say, well, this is why it went wrong. I had measles. The office was shut down or whatever it might be. Let them tell the story, because it is coming directly from their lips. And that is, frankly, unassailable material. It is not secondhand. It is not dubious, because the other side can say, well, he doesn't know anything about this. You know, this is something, you know, he could have picked up in, you know, chip paper. We need hard, direct evidence. And I know this sounds trite and obvious, but you know what? On many occasions, this vital, simple objective is missed.
Thank you, Dominic. And finally, how can I make them more accessible to the reader?
Right. My take is this. With any witness statement, you are trying to persuade the court that you, your client's version of events is to be preferred, is accurate. And if you can't get the story across, I mean, if the judge doesn't understand it, then the judge is going to be lost. And particularly, can I point out that when it comes to the crunch, the claimant carries the burden of proof. It is for the claimant to prove their case in a civil claim on the balance of probabilities. So if you can't get the judge to understand it, then how the hell are you going to win? So really, I come back to George Orwell and the idea that a witness statement should be really clear. If you look at the guidance, the practice direction, the notes in the white book, generally under Part 32, are brilliant. But it should be in chronological order. Explain step by step what happened. I'm a great believer in, if it's a long witness statement, and it may need to be, in introducing subheadings. So again, if it was a commercial dispute, we might start off saying, you know, one, the parties, and then we describe who the claimant is, who the defendant is. Then further on down, a further subheading, the meeting, the agreement, the contract, the breach, the loss, consequential damages. And that way, what you're doing is a bit like a roadmap. You are enabling the person reading it, and the person who you want to read it and to comprehend it is, of course, the judge. You are flagging up the route, and so they can move through it comfortably. They could think, right, now what was the bit about, you know, these goods being defective? So, you know, you'd have a heading, you know, alleged defects or whatever. And so it's all about making it navigable. In some disputes, I'm a great believer in producing effectively a family tree. It could be of individuals, it could be a family dispute, it could be an inheritance claim. But it could be a problem with a corporate body. And, you know, we've got subsidiary companies. So we've got the parent company, and then we've got three subsidiaries, and then we've got, you know, people who supply them. And a diagram, they say, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words. A diagram can be worth a thousand words as well, because all the time, the Holy Grail is to explain, to persuade, to convince. And so things like that really do make it manageable, digestible, without going overboard. Any key documents, so again, back to my commercial dispute, the contract, there should be a reference in the witness statement to the contract. What page is it in the bundle? The circumstances in which the contract was entered into. You know, the parties met at this hotel on this date, and at the end of a two-hour meeting, they signed heads of agreement or whatever it might be. But we keep coming back. We keep coming back to this really simple principle, which is to explain is your target. That's your aim, to convince. And the more accessible it is, the more likely it is that the reader is going to say, well, I see that. I get that. I understand it. So witness statements are absolutely crucial. As I say, there's been talk about changing the rules. I don't think there is anything wrong with the rules. My final thought on all of this is that the problem is with people who don't comply with the rules. And a final massive warning before we come to a conclusion, which again is not always appreciated, but if you breach the rules on witness statements, your entire case can be thrown out, whether you're a claimant or a defendant. The authority to look at is a decision from 2017, a case called Gladwin and Bogescu, B-O-G-E-S-C-U, Gladwin and Bogescu, a decision of the very astute Mr. Justice Turner. The solicitors in that case were late with witness statements, and he said, I'm striking the claim out, which was astonishing because the defendant had admitted liability. It was a quantum-only claim. And with that, the court said, well, no, we're not having it. You've breached the rules. Have a look at part 3.4 of the CPR. The court can strike out if there is a breach of an order, a rule, a direction. And the judge said, you didn't serve the witness statements in time. You've breached part 3210. I'm striking you out. You can get lost. Now, obviously, there's the prospect of a negligence claim against the solicitors who were late. But the critical point is that the entire claim, one where the defendants have put their hands up and said, we concede primary liability, it collapsed because witness statements were not served when they should have been. How frightening is that? Yeah. And that takes me to a conclusion. And thank you for your astute, Sarah, astute questions. And I hope that shed a bit of light on what is a major topic. I can and do talk for a day about witness statements, but if you know, nail me to the floor, Those are, I think, the almighty points to take on board.
Some very, very useful points there on the practicalities, pitfalls, and the importance of witness statements. Thank you. Many lessons to be learned, I guess. The value of witness statements can't go amiss. And as you've said, Dominic, it just goes to show that it can impact on the whole success of the case. So really yeah. grateful for your time today. Thank you so much for joining me, Dominic.
Oh, my pleasure is it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Tune in next time. And thanks for listening all. Bye.
Bye-bye.